Okay, good to vach, everybody. We're about to begin saying slichos, and when we begin the slichos, we begin with the words lo bechesed v'lo b'maasim banu lefanecha kedalim u'charashim dafaknu d'lasecha. That we don't approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu with accomplishments and chesed and in mitzvos. We're approaching HaKadosh Baruch Hu impoverished and destitute, desperately knocking on the door of the Ribono Shel Olam. And a question that should occur to us is, as depressing as that sounds, l'chora, it's not depressing enough. Because the mitzvah of tshuva requires that first we recognize averos, not just that we're destitute, that we're poor, that we haven't done enough, that we're missing certain masim. Halavai, that should be our biggest problem. The bigger problem is we've also spoken a lot of lashon hara. We've also heard a lot of people. We've also failed in our mitzvos ben adam l'makom. We've also done a lot of things, a lot of averos, things that we're not proud of. So the bigger story is our failed spiritual journey. So it seems to be a theme that comes up a little bit later on. Ki avonoseinu ravu l'mala rosh v'shmaseinu gada ad l'shamayim. Rav Aaron Cutler points out in his Mishnah Rabbi Aaron Chelik Beis why it is that we bury the lead in our recitation of slichos. Second question, the Psukim in Yishayo Perek Nunhei discuss Jews Avoda during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva in particular. And referring to the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, the Navi says, Dirshu Hashem Bihimatzo Kiru'uhu Biyoso Karov, and then continues and describes, Ki Kasher Yerid HaGeshem V'Hashelig Min HaShemayim, just like the rain and the snow comes down in Shemayim v'shamelo yashuv kiyim hirves haaretz, and it doesn't go back up to Shemayim until it nourishes the ground v'alida v'itzmicha, and it causes growth to come, it causes vegetation to grow v'nasen zera l'zreya v'lechem la'ochel, and it produces food for mankind kiyim yedvarei asher yetzi mipi lo yashuvei la'irekom kiyim asas asher chafatzti v'itzliach asher shalachtiv. That just like that's the role of the rain, so too we are supposed to be successful in a similar way. We're also supposed to do tshuva. It's a funny mashal for tshuva, though. Now, I would imagine tshuva would be like your car breaks down and the mechanic fixes it. You know, something's broken, it messes up, and you fix something. But it's describing of the rain and the whole system of evaporation of water and the cycle of weather. That's supposed to represent tshuva. How exactly do we understand how that relates to tshuva? And a final question. In the Perek of Tehillim that we say on Rosh Hashanah, we say that Mi Yale V'Har Hashem U'Mi Yakum B'Mkom Kacho Niki Chapayim Uvar Levav Asher Lo Nasa L'Shav Nafshi. Chavetz Chaim raises the following very simple question. That once we've identified a person deserving of ascending the Har Hashem and standing B'Mkom Kacho as someone who's Niki Chapayim Uvar Levav, a person with clean hands, a pure heart, is it then necessary to describe Asher Lo Nasa Lashav Nafshi, that he's also somebody that doesn't carry his soul in vain? Obviously, if he has a pure heart, if he's perfect, then he's not carrying his neshama in vain. Then obviously, his neshama is doing a pretty good job if he hasn't done anything wrong. So I saw Rabbi Yeruchim Olshin in one of his shiurim points out a Sfas Emes on Shabbos Shuvas Shnas Tavkuf Nun Aleph. Sfas Emes writes something that helps us, I think, frame our entire tshuva process and our entire really lives, but particularly when we're taking cheshbon of our lives this time of year. And Sfas Emes writes, ki hinei, ikur ha-tshuva hu l'sakein, and here's the key word, hashlichus shenishlach ha-adam la'olam hazeh. Now the primary element of tshuva is to be mesakein our shlichus, what we were sent to this world to do, what our mission is here in this world. Meaning that our avoda is not only to learn Torah and to perform mitzvot, it certainly is that, but it's also to pay attention to our unique kochos, to pay attention to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us in terms of identifying our mission in this world. And when we can identify what we're put here for, when we can identify, not just the broad general, what we're all put here for, to serve Hashem, to do mitzvot, not to have others, but what's special about me? What can I do that other people can't do? What kochos does HaKadosh Baruch Hu give me to enable me to find my niche in Avodas Hashem? So to better understand that concept, Simcha Zissel Broyd quotes a mashal from the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim says, imagine a person who's in desperate need of funding for his business. So he approaches a number of potential lenders, and finally he finds someone who's willing to give him the loan that he needs. But this person deals in cash, from guy, right? right? So he gives them a briefcase full of marked $100 bills, right? So he knows exactly which bills these are. He gives it, and now go and use it for what you need. The loan comes due sometime later, and the fellow comes back with the same briefcase, the same bills, and he returns it to the guy when the loan is due, a year later, 5 years later. How does it make the lender feel when he gets back the exact same bills, the exact same money? It makes him feel terrible. You think I gave it to you so that you could just hold it? What are you decorated your house with it and then like took it down and just gave it back to me? The point was you were supposed to invest in the business. You were supposed to do something productive with it, make enough money back that you know you will have benefited from it, and then you pay me back. Chazal have an expression that milva lahotza nitna. There are two types of loans. There are two words in the Hebrew language. There's she'ela and halva'a. So the she'el is, I lend you my car. So when you return my car, you're not supposed to return an approximation of my car. You know, something that I lent you a Toyota Camry, so you give me back a Honda Accord. You know, pretty much the same, roughly the same value. You give me No. If I lend you a she'el, you better give me back the very thing that I lent you. But milva? If I lend you money, the whole point is that you're supposed to spend it. The whole point is you're supposed to do something with it. You're not supposed to just give it back to me. So the Ribono Shel Olam lends a person in the Neshama Tahara from under the Kisei HaKavod. And that's a halva'a, not a she'ela. The loan is to be used throughout the entire life, throughout a person's entire life, to grow that neshama, to elevate that neshama through Esek HaTorah, through Kiyum HaMitzvos. So even if you don't corrupt your neshama, but what are you doing? You're going to give back. Even if a person manages to avoid all the averus, so what's he going to do? He's going to give back the very same pure neshama that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him. And why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu send the neshama down into the world? So yeah, Mi'ala V'Har Hashem, who's going to ascend the mountain of Kedusha? It's only somebody asher lo nasa lashav nafshi, not enough to be niki chapayim of our levav, not enough to be clean of any avera. Asher lo nasa lashav nafshi, I didn't carry my nefesh lashav for no reason. There was a goal, there was a reason, there was a mission, there was something I was trying to accomplish. Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky has a very similar idea. Rabbi Abramsky would speak of it's recorded in the Sefer Penine Rabbeinu Yecheskel, that Rabbi Cheskel would often speak about the severity of the din and punishment that a person faces when it comes to Shemayim. And he says that after spending a long life in Olam Hazeh, person comes before the Beis and Shalmaila, the judgment is going to be, says the Sefer Penine Rabbeinu Yecheskel, al ma shahayu mesugal litzmoach mimenu lefi kishronosav v'lohotzi zos lepoel. What he was meant to accomplish in this world, but he failed to bring it out into action. He's going to be judged and punished for not using his personal capabilities. It's a bit of a frightening concept that you can have two people that live the exact same life. They do the exact same mitzvos, the exact same averos, in the exact same way, with the exact same kavanos, and yet one of them is going to be judged favorably and the other not as favorably, because one of them was given extra kishronos and the other one not. I mean, this is obvious to any parent, right? Anyone who's a parent of more than one child. So we know there are different expectations. If my second grader sits next to me the entire day of Rosh Hashanah, the entire davening, and he behaves nicely, and he's using his machzor to the best of his ability, and he davens the whole time, so he's definitely getting rewarded for that, right? Meaning that's unusual for a second grader. That's something that he's going to get some sort of major prize. If my second year base medrash, child does the same, it's not, no, I mean, we don't take anything for granted and whatever, but, you know, it's no kunz. I might even say, like, why weren't you in yeshiva? You know, like, but you know, it's not like this great kunz that he did something. There are obviously different expectations. They could do the same thing, but the Ribono Shel Olam treats us the same way. Rabbanit Henkin, in the immediate aftermath of losing her son and daughter-in-law to that terrible pigua, was asked how the tragedy has impacted her emuna. And she responded with one of the most powerful things I've ever heard. She said, I quote, "I never believed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives out prizes. I never thought that is what he does. So it's not like I was disappointed with him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us here to fulfill a tafkid in the world. All of us have a tafkid. Sometimes that tafkid is pleasant. Sometimes that tafkid is not pleasant. But we must get up to fulfill that tafkid. That's why we're here in this world. So the Henkin family is going to learn about a less pleasant tafkid than it had a month ago." A sense of shlichus, a sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me in my life is here because he wants me to do something that's for me to do. The Lubavitcher Rebbe famously would comment that your birthday is the day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that the world can't be without you any longer. Which means that there's a reason we're here each and every day. A person has to believe that. Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Tversky said that on the Pasuk, Lo'odia Levnei Adam Gvuros of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Pashup Shat is to let everyone know the Gvuros of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He suggested, as he was wont to do, that this is all about a person believing in himself. It's all about self-esteem. Lo'odia Levnei Adam Gvuros, let the Bnei Adam appreciate their own Gvura, their own strength, their own ability. And then, Uchvarad HaMalchus, then you'll see the great Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Malchus. You'll only see the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Malchus when each person down here builds up their self-esteem. And everyone who knows, whoever met Rabbi Tversky, Zichron Levracha, knew that he would often talk about the fact that even though he wrote dozens of books, he really only wrote one book, a book about self-esteem. It's just that one time he wrote it in Hasidisha stories, and one time he wrote it in psychological jargon, and one time he wrote it in Parsha Divrei Torah, but it's all the same. It's all about self-esteem. He used to say that if you're not sure whether there's a stira, if you think that there might be a stira between self-esteem and gaiva, he said all you have to do is look at the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim had the audacity to write the Mishnah Berurah. What was he doing when he was writing the Mishnah Berurah? He was saying, look, this is how a Jew has to live his life, and I'm going to tell you. I'm giving you the book so that no one else has to worry about this anymore, because I decided this. And can you imagine? There was no bigger anav than the Chafetz Chaim. But to take that on his shoulders, so it's not a stira. He knew that that was his tafkid. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, in the second volume of Emes Liyakov Adnach, which Rabbi Reisman pointed out was printed before the first volume for some reason, but in the second volume of Emes Liyakov Anach, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky had printed his hesped that he gave for the Chafetz Chaim. Rabbi Yaakov must have been a very young rabbi at the time, in his late 20s or something, in his 30s maybe, and he printed the hesped that he, the hesped that he gave for the Chafetz Chaim. And he said in that hesped that when his good friend, Yedidi, Rav David Leibovitz, the Chafetz Chaim's nephew, wanted to, and the founder of Yeshiva's Chafetz Chaim, right, wanted to leave Radin to learn in a prestigious kollel. So the Chafetz Chaim said to him, "You're kohen. You need to stay here to learn kachim. You can't go learning other things. Mashiach's going to come. You got to be ready to learn kachim. What are you talking about?" So Rav Zavitz said, "No. Look, he had a reply. You know, he was ready. He said, if I go and I learn kachim, then I'm going to know all the halachas about bringing karbanos. But if I never learn Hilchos Shabbos, I'm never going to know when I have to bring a carbon, when I don't, because I'm not going to know what's the raisa, what's the rabbanon, when I'm chayiv in a carbon or not." So Chafetz Chaim said, "That's why I wrote the Mishnah Berurah. You know, why do you think I put on every page of Mishnah Berurah whether something's the raisa or the rabbanon? I took care of that already. So I took care of my tafkid. Now you take care of your tafkid. You're a kayin, and go learn kachim." The sense of understanding of like what my personal mission is. In Parsha Shemini, we read about how Moshe Rabbeinu served for 7 days as a kohen gadol, and Aaron HaKohen was very hesitant to take over. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Karav el mizbeach." And Rashi explains that Aaron was bosh. He was whatever it means. Delayed or embarrassed or unsure. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Lama atabosh lekach nifcharta." And many of us have that experience, that we're bosh, whatever bosh means, that we're unsure of ourselves, we're not sure exactly what our tafkid is, we're a little bit late in coming to our tafkid. You know, normally teenagers try everything, right? They think they can excel in everything, so they try everything, and then they realize they can't excel in everything, and ultimately it straightens out. But when? Like in our 20s, in our 30s, in our 40s, when exactly, like, do we come to that recognition of like what our life's path is? Right, lama tabosh lekach nifcharta. We have to come to that eventually. After saying Havdalah tonight, I turned on my phone and I found a voice note from my friend Rabbi Nikki Liss, who I quoted earlier, who I was privileged to reconnect with this past week in London. And Rav Liss is a fascinating person. It's two closest Rebbeim, I would say, if I could say, based on the way he was talking, are Rabbi Jonathan Sachs and Rabbi Moshe Sturmbach. And I'm pretty sure he's the only person that has those two as his two closest Rebbeim. So he told me that last week, when I was there, he told me that once Rav Sturmbach was trying to describe what Rav Elchanan Wasserman was like to him, and Rav Sturmbach just stopped and he said, I'm sorry, you just don't have the kelim to understand what Rav Elchanan was. You just don't have the bandwidth. You can't possibly understand what Rav Elchanan was. And he said, don't feel bad that I'm saying it that way. He said, because when the Brisker Rav tried to explain to me who his father was, he also stopped and said, sorry, Moshe, you just don't have the kelim to understand who Rav Chaim was. So don't feel bad. It's not an insult. And then on this voice, that's what he told me last week. Then I opened up my phone, Motzei Shabbos. He said, it occurred to me on Shabbos, I never told you the context within which Rav Sternbach told me that story. He said, the context was, he was telling me about the famous story about Rav Elchanan leaving London for the last time. You see, when Rav Elchanan came to America, every time he came to America, he went to London twice. Because he went through London, so on the way there and on the way back. So Rav Elchanan left America as the war was beginning to rage in Europe, and people begged him to stay in America, and he said, no, I got to go back. He went to London, and then in London, it got even worse while he was there, and they told him, please stay. And Rav Sternbach was a young man in London at the time, and he was there when they were at the train station. They were saying, please, don't go back. You're going to die. You know, stay here. So Rav Elchanan very famously said, a captain does not abandon his ship. And that's the part that everybody knows. But Rav Sternbach then continued, and he said, somebody said to Rav Elchanan, ah, so the Rosh Yeshiva's maftiach, that everything's going to be okay, and the Yeshiva's going to survive, and everything's going to be fine. And Rav Elchanan looked at the person the way Rav Elchanan would look at a person. He says, nay, I didn't say that. It's not what I said. We have a haftacha from the Ribbono Shel Olam, Kilos Yishakach Mipizaro, that the Torah is going to survive, the Torah will never be forgotten. But we have no haftacha that any of us will be standing. But a captain does not abandon his ship. And Rav Sternbach, at that point, with tears in his eyes, said, there's no point in me continuing, because you don't have the kelim to understand who Rav Elchanan was. Meaning, at that moment in his life, Rav Elchanan said, I know where I'm going to. I know I'm going to my certain death. But I also know what I was put on this earth to do. And I was put on this earth. Who talks about themselves in that way? I'm the captain of a ship. I was put on this earth to be a leader of Talmidim, to be a Rebbe to my Talmidim. And if I taught them throughout my life how to live, now I'm going to teach them how to die. And I'm teaching them how to die, Al Kiddush Hashem. And he gave that famous lesson on the last night of their lives about how to die, Al Kiddush Hashem, that shiur about Kiddush Hashem. So we start Slichos not by highlighting our Averos, because that's not what the Din Cheshbon is really all about. We start by talking about how Kedalim Ucharashim Dafaknu Dilasecha. We were here to accomplish, and we acknowledge that we haven't fulfilled our mission to its fullest. And the message of the rain and the snow is actually the ideal mashal for tshuva, because we're describing not how a person fixes averos, but how when Hashem sends water down to this earth, it's not meant to just come down and come right back up. The water comes down to this earth, it nourishes the ground, things grow, it sustains humanity, it does all of this stuff, and then it comes back up. And that's what our neshama is meant to do down here on this earth. So there's something very powerful about a person who recognizes their mission in life. It gives you a sense of clarity, and often helps you prioritize your time and your efforts. You know, in my personal life, as the demands on my time and energies got overwhelming a few years ago, I just came to a certain realization, like this epiphany of like my core mission, and it helped immensely in my overall avoda. And each year, that's the avoda, to try to revisit. Has my mission changed? Is my mission am I fulfilling that mission? And that's really the avoda that hopefully began Rosh Chodesh Elul, but if it didn't, it's the avoda that begins tonight.